Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. In late June, just before a pilot program governing hemp production in North Carolina was set to expire, Governor Roy Cooper signed a bill legalizing the sale and production of hemp and of CBD here. Hemp can be used to make a range of products from fiber to paper, textiles, clothing, paint, insulation, animal feed, and more, including CBD, a substance that has been touted for addressing a wide variety of health issues, including anxiety, insomnia, and chronic pain. What hemp is not is marijuana, and CBD will not give you the high associated with THC, which is derived from its cousin, the marijuana plant. This pilot program, which allowed for the temporary production of hemp and hemp products, ended up employing about 1,500 people, so its legalization was good news for them, and it may end up being good news for proponents of legalizing medical marijuana. Already, several bills have been put before both houses of the North Carolina General Assembly. They continue to stall, but polling shows a majority of voters favor a yes vote. So this hour, a look at what the legalization of hemp means to those in the industry and its potential influence on marijuana laws. Rod Kite is an attorney licensed in both North Carolina and Oregon, representing businesses in the cannabis industry. Good morning to you. Welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
You're welcome. It's radio, so you have to talk. Bert James,
that's right.
Bert James is an agronomist and hemp farmer who consults others in the industrial hemp and agriculture sector. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Dr. Wuxian Yang is professor and graduate program coordinator in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Design and oversight coordinator of the University Hemp Program at North Carolina A&T. Doctor, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
So let's start with a basic question. And Ron, I'll begin with you, since hemp is so useful and because you cannot get high from CBD oil, why has it been illegal and so controversial for so long?
Yeah, that's a great question. So back around the turn of the century, actually in the early 30s, cannabis, you know, prior to that time had been legal. And in fact, you used to see cannabis tinctures and cannabis medicines. Was actually a common type of tincture that you would see on the shelves of pharmacists. But because of some interplay between the end of the prohibition of alcohol, combined with some industrial tycoon fights, and I could spend a lot of time on all this, so I'm just going to kind of gloss through this to get to the legal piece. We saw the cannabis plant increasingly made illegal through various federal and then eventually state moves. And to get to your question, the reason that hemp has been illegal is that the cannabis plant itself was placed on the controlled substances list. In effect, it's an illegal substance, with the exception of its stalks and also seeds that are non-germinating. And so cannabis has two legal, or the plant itself is divided into two legal tracks. There's marijuana, which is the cannabis plant with more than 0.3% Delta-9 THC. And there's hemp, which is the cannabis plant that contains no more than 0.3% Delta-9 THC. But the fact that it's the same plant has caused quite a bit of issues and problems over the year. But most notably, to answer your question, it has, you know, hemp itself was brought under the control of the Controlled Substances Act federally and made illegal for almost 100 years.
So we're going to talk more about all of that, because all of that is kind of interconnected as we go through the program. Among other things, Bert, you are a hemp farmer. When did you decide that that was a crop you were interested in growing? And what, if anything, did it replace on your farm?
In addition to being a farmer, I'm also a crop consultant. So we approach the industry from strictly an agronomic setting, where we needed a rotation crop. We've got some weed problems in our state, and currently industrial hemp has no chemical, there's no chemicals you can spray on it. They're just not legal, just because they've not been registered. So we were approaching it from to kind of give our system a break, because hemp is such a voracious plant when it comes to growth. It outcompetes everything around it. It's also a cold germ plant, which means we can establish it earlier in the season prior to a lot of weed problems that would emerge. So we came at the industry from the fiber and grain side. We didn't know anything about CBD. So I got my network of farmers. We created a co-op and we funded the commission in 2017, which is part of the North Carolina requirement. They wanted to see that there was public and grower buy-in, you know, for the plant. And we did that in very short order. And we feel like that kind of created the momentum in the state on some level, where the NC State got involved. A lot of the legislators realized this was a good idea. And so we enjoyed, you know, a honeymoon period, if you will, where everybody was pulling in the same direction. And that gained national attention. But purely from an agronomic standpoint, the plant has a lot to offer in the way of weed control, but also now the hot topic, which is it's a carbon sink. So we're going to, you know, basically try to capture a lot of carbons in the atmosphere. Hemp does a really good job of that. So it was kind of like a dual pronged approach. And of course, everybody wants something new, you know, for the industry.
This is like a miracle plant. That's the first I've heard about it being a carbon sink. And it just put another thing on the list of things that this plant can do and has done in the past. We did a show on this 100 years ago on this program, where it came up that somebody made an entire car, except for the engine, out of hemp products. So, I mean, it's remarkable what this plant can do. Dr. Young, one of your areas of interest and expertise is the rescue, as I understand it, of endangered plant species and the mass production of rare plants with special economic and social value. But you're also the oversight coordinator of North Carolina A&T's hemp program. How do these areas of expertise, because hemp is not rare, how do they overlap?
Well, thank you for the question. You know, just let me give you a little background about myself. And, you know, I'm a professor of horticulture, and all my academic trainings are in horticulture. And with, you know, almost actually 40 some years of working experience in horticulture, which is dealing with plants. Yes, my research expertise is in plant tissue culture micropropagation, basically apply the plant biotechnology that can be used efficiently to rescue endangered and socially, you know, economically important crop. And we all know that hemp is, you know, just like you stated, so it's everybody knows about it. So, but anyway, you know, hemp is a plant. So that's just really direct link to, you know, my background and my academic training and my working experience, and also directly related to the hemp. You know, I was serving on the North Carolina Industrial Health Commission from 2016 to 2020, and one of the two, you know, universities, you know, North Carolina State University and the North Carolina A&T State University on the commission. So I represent the North Carolina A&T State University. By the way, I want to, you know, you know, North Carolina A&T State University has the largest college of agriculture in the nation among the HBCUs, historical black colleges and universities. So we are here to help, you know, our stakeholders and across everybody, you know, primarily the small limited resource farmers. So we help, you know, we do science and help farmers to learn, understand, grow, and hopefully profit.
So for several years, Bert, the state, as Dr. Young just alluded to, had conducted this pilot program to see what, I guess, to find out what they could see about hemp or what they could do about hemp or with hemp. What was the purpose of the pilot program? And now that hemp's been legalized, is that the direct result of the success of that pilot program?
We were proud of our pilot program. You know, hindsight's always crystal clear. But I remember we made the point to the commission and our legislators that, you know, farmers are just, they have the nature. If it's an opportunity, they go after it in a major way. So I remember we made the point that we should not be inhibited by acreage limits in this pilot program. If it was a true pilot program, we needed to see if we could make money with it. And to make money, you know, we needed the traditional scale to purchase equipment, plants, and, you know, to really feel out the opportunity. Well, our farmers have really good land and they tend to be very good at what they do. And so for the pilot program, you know, we went big very quick. And this was a pretty much a scaled pilot program almost out of the gate. And the commission listened, you know, to their credit. They listened to the stakeholders. And what happened was we were given the opportunity to grow. However, we quickly outpaced the market, even as a pilot program for CBD specifically.
But I guess the question is, what was the purpose of the program? Well, the state allowed it. So what did they want to find out? And did they, obviously they found out what they needed to know because they've legalized it, but what was the function of it?
Basically see how it would perform here. You know, okay. Would it grow? Would it thrive? Were there economic opportunities? You know, was there a market established? So on and so forth. And I guess, unfortunately, the answer to that was not yet. These markets are just now, you know, he mentioned 17, you know, we're almost in 2023. So 6 long years later, a lot of the things that we thought were in place, that we were told were in place, are just now coming to fruition. Because hemp is a miracle plant, but we've learned to not listen to all the hype. There was a lot of hype just to try to get that momentum to get it legalized.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're undoing a lot of that information that was provided. There's a lot of truth there that was not explained to us early on.
Rod Kite, you are licensed to practice law in both North Carolina and in the state of Oregon. In Oregon, marijuana is legal for medical and recreational use. You can grow marijuana at your home legally. None of that is true in North Carolina. And it is difficult, as I understand it, to look at a plant and say, oh, that's a marijuana plant, and oh, no, that's a hemp plant. Is that part of the problem here? It's difficult to identify exactly what you're growing.
Well, I think that could be potentially part of the problem. But again, as I said earlier, you know, cannabis is cannabis. And the literally by law, the sole distinction between a marijuana plant and a hemp plant. And by the way, nowadays we call it hemp versus industrial hemp. Industrial hemp was the legal term that was used at the federal level and the North Carolina state level until 2018 at the federal level. And just now, as you alluded to, just this past month or two at North Carolina. But the sole distinction between them is one compound, one cannabinoid, as we call it. It's Delta 9 THC. And so if that Delta 9 THC is more than 0.3%, that's a marijuana plant. If it's less than 0.3%, it's a hemp plant. And Delta 9 THC is odorless. It's colorless. It's exactly a hemp plant looks exactly the same, smells exactly the same, grows very similarly. I mean, there's all sorts of different strains and genetics as a marijuana plant. But as for the basis, the reason that they're, you know, marijuana is legal in Oregon, but not in North Carolina, has a lot to do with a lot of factors and probably more than we have time to get into, but I'll just a few. One is that, you know, there has, despite it being a miracle plant, unfortunately, cannabis has been demonized over the years, and it conflicts with a lot of other interests. First of all, there's a lot of people that have bought into the sale of the marketing sale of marijuana as a drug plant, and maybe we can talk about that a little bit more.
We will do that when we come back. We have to take a break. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about hemp and the fact that it's been legalized in terms of growing it in North Carolina following a pilot program that ended at the end of June. Dr. Wuxin Yang is with us. He is a professor and graduate program coordinator and in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Design at North Carolina A&T. Bert James is here. He's an industrial hemp consultant and a farmer who grows hemp. And Rod Kite is here, an attorney and author who specializes in dealing with hemp and CBD and marijuana issues around the country. And I had to stop you from talking about more about that just before the break. So continue what you were saying. Rod, go ahead.
Sure. Thank you, Mike. So I was talking about the different competing interests that hemp bumps into. And one of those was disinformation and a fear of the plant that's been marketed to people, you know, for years. And North Carolina has traditionally been a little more conservative than the West Coast, which is Oregon, that does have marijuana legalization. But hemp also bumps into and conflicts with a lot of other commercial interests that don't want to see it thrive. What you talked about, you know, there was a hemp car, you know, so there's plastics and petroleum industry. There's the tobacco industry. There's the alcohol industry. There's the drug, you know, the pharmaceutical industry. And now what we're beginning to see is actually marijuana, that industry is beginning to compete with the hemp industry. Hemp can do a number of things, but one of the things it does is it produces compounds called cannabinoids that are very beneficial for health. You mentioned CBD. CBD has been the subject of numerous clinical trials and studies as to its health benefits, and has helped a lot of people with a number of ailments. So, but there are also other cannabinoids, and now there are hemp products that actually do produce an intoxicating or high effect. And so the marijuana industry, the large marijuana industry, sees hemp as competition. And so what happens is in states that are now beginning to consider legalization of marijuana, primarily on the East Coast and the Southeast, the marijuana industry has quite a lot of resources. They've made lots of money over the years. And they come in and they attempt usually to try to restrict hemp, restrict and regulate it so that it does not compete with its own products.
So, Dr. Young, Rod mentioned a few minutes ago that there's like just one little switch that changes the nature of the plant from being a marijuana plant to a hemp plant. Can that switch be turned on? Can it do it? Can the plant do it itself? If you plant what you believe to be a hemp crop, can you discover that you have some THC in that crop or above what you should have? Or is that not possible?
Well, I would say it's possible scientifically. You know, I want to add to, you know, actually, you know, before you call me, I was thinking about, you know, this with my hand, and add to Ms. Kite's statement that regarding the hemp and marijuana, you know, morphologically, there's no difference between the two plants. And, you know, technically, they are the exact same plants. They have the same scientific name. The only difference, like Mr. Kite mentioned, that's just the THC level. You know, one is, you know, the 0.3%, that's the limit. So below, that's hemp. And then above it, that's, you know, become hot. That's become, you know, marijuana plants. So genetically, that's, you know, only one loci difference. It, you know, genetic code, you know, that's the one difference. But to your question directly, I think some people already are in going that direction. So maybe they can turn on and off, you know, a gene. So that can be, you know, and test the THC levels, I turned that one off, then we'll go to industry hemp direction rather than producing, you know, the THC level. So make that in under control.
Can anybody, Bert, now that the pilot program is over and the growing of hemp has been legalized in North Carolina, can any farmer do it? And are there any concerns about farmers growing great quantities of this hemp product, but hidden amongst the hemp products is a field of marijuana that is difficult to spot because it all looks the same?
Well, you know, we had a lot of learning to do. And again, when we came to this pilot, CBD was not on my radar. And unfortunately, yeah, I'll go ahead and admit it now, I misspoke at some of the public hearings saying that, you know, there's no way a farmer would plant marijuana in the middle of a industrial hemp field because there's male plants. And then that would pollinate the female, you know, portions of the marijuana, which is where all the CBD, the cannabinoids reside. I didn't take inventory that if we were growing all female CBD plants, that it really wouldn't matter if you had female Delta 9 plants. And so that was just, you know, I admit my lack of knowledge there. But the answer is, you know, since the pilot program, to my knowledge, none of that went on, at least not at scale. That was, you know, very much a concern because the plants are identical. And a lot of the CBD and cannabinoid genetics were born from THC genetics out in Colorado. So, you know, you've got a bunch of short, bushy plants with these huge colas or buds. And so for officials, they could not tell without testing the plant to see if it was THC or CBD. So that was a concern early on. And it, you know, a lot of people had plants stolen because people thought it was THC. But, you know, I don't feel like that we did that on any level. And so now the answer, the second part of the question is, you know, we were a state-run program for the first 4 or 5 years. And I think some of the, you know, all that momentum we had and all that energy, you know, there's a limit that some of these officials, and I won't name names, but, you know, there was a lot of complaints. There was a big fallout when the industry collapsed, which is basically a fair statement. When we overproduced for the market, you know, there were radio commercials. I remember it. And they were talking about $40,000 an acre profit potential. And, you know, you don't have to do much math. If a farmer hears that, they're thinking, wow, you know, this is salvation. We're going to save the farm. And so that was the mindset. And so there's a lot of hardship because it didn't happen overnight. I mean, it didn't happen slowly. I mean, when I say it collapsed, it was literally like a tall building falling to the ground. And we went from what was expected to be, you know, 20 bucks a pound, $15 a pound. For the plant, it fell out of sight to, you know, maybe $2 a pound. And then all of a sudden the input cost was so high, it was a break-even crop, you know, just business as usual for farmers, just trying to scratch out a few bucks per acre. So I feel like that because of that fallout, farmers are now much more cautious. When they hear hemp now, you kind of see them turn their head and say, okay, come back to me, you know, let me know when it's real. And so that happened. It's unfortunate because there's so much opportunity, but we have that black mark now on the industry.
So this plant can be used for many different purposes, but we keep talking about CBD because CBD oil, it's on every street corner now, these CBD oil stores that have various products that are used because they can relieve pain, et cetera, reduce anxiety in some people depending upon the product. According to the FDA, quote, CBD has the potential to harm you, and harm can happen even before you become aware of it. CBD can cause liver industry. It can affect how other drugs you are taking work. And they go on to warn about male product reproductive toxicity, changes in alertness, gastrointestinal distress, and more. If that's the position, Rod, of the FDA, why is this substance legal?
It's a great question. I'll try to answer it in a very quick amount. All of those things are true in a sense, but when we talk about liver toxicity, for instance, just to take one of those out of the list of things that FDA's talked about, that was based primarily on one clinical study with mice where they were inundated with CBD and there were some mild liver toxicity issues. CBD itself is one of the most, or what I should say, one of the least harmful compounds known to man. And I don't, that sounds like a big exaggerated statement, but it's not. You know, in terms of relative to other types of products that are on the market that we take, whether it be, you know, natural herbs and things that you can buy on the grocery store shelf that we use for various things, or something like aspirin or ibuprofen, whatnot, CBD is so significantly less toxic than those. It's hardly worth mentioning. The FDA has a struggle, and again, I'll try to be quick with this, as to how to deal with CBD, primarily based on what's known as the drug exclusion rule. And that says that if a compound has not been marketed as a food or has not been the subject or a drug, and then there's a clinical study for it to be marketed and approved as a drug. And I'm just kind of, again, skipping over lots of detailed issues of law that the listeners probably don't want to hear. Then that same compound cannot be added to food or marketed. So what happened with CBD is just a few years before hemp was legalized at the federal level, a pharmaceutical company did clinical trials for CBD for certain types of severe epilepsy, and that the clinical trials resulted in an FDA-approved drug. And so CBD got caught up in this drug exclusion rule, where it sort of got beaten to the punch by a pharmaceutical drug, and then the FDA doesn't really have a whole lot of leeway or latitude to say, oh, well, we've approved CBD as a drug, but by the way, you can also just put it in food. You can also market it as a dietary supplement. The FDA has more leeway than it lets on, and it's been a significant source of frustration for the industry. But there is a rule that has sort of gotten in the way of that.
There are some people who are suspicious of the FDA because they think that the FDA, Bert, defaults to drug companies, tips its hat to the pharmaceutical industry, and that the pharmaceutical industry sees the CBD being produced independently as a threat. And that's one of the reasons they put out a statement like that, because they don't want you to think you should use it. Any credence to that in your mind at all? Bert.
I was hoping Rod was going to answer that.
You Bert know, and I are probably on the same page about that, yeah.
Yeah, we're definitely probably all in alignment. That's the tip of the iceberg, I'll say that. There's, and this is my humble, you know, farmer opinion, but there's so much corruption in our government. It's a beautiful thing still, but we got a lot of work to do, because there are a lot of big industry interests that come first. And as Rod said, it was a terrible struggle. And even the pharmaceutical company, they were playing the same game. They knew that if they got their drug, you know, approved prior to the industry really getting its feet underneath it, then they would have the high ground. And so we struggle with that in a major way. And then turns out, the epilepsy, which is fantastic that there was a cure for that, but turns out it was not a large population source. And so the drug itself was astronomically priced. And so to my knowledge, it really never got the traction that they hoped that it would. And it never really led to other drugs that would follow behind it. So it kind of just was a stalemate for, 5 years.
Dr. Yang, you may not be able to answer this question because you're not a chemist and you're not a medical doctor, but maybe you can. Anything that you overindulge in, including water, will harm you. So unless you really overdo your intake of CBD, from what you know of that as a chemical substance, is there anything to be concerned about?
Well, I think, just go back to, we talk about the hemp. I mean, hemp is a regular crop, and just like anything else. So if we just follow the rules and follow the law, and if you go, excess, just more than what, just in the common people commonly take, I mean, that's probably, just like anything else, just like you stated, Ms. Collins, I mean, that's, otherwise, I don't think it was any harm. So.
Rod, as I understand it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you've been dealing with marijuana cases for much of your legal career, and you turned to cannabis products personally after a brush with cancer while you were undergoing chemotherapy. I take it that these were CBD products that you took while you were in chemotherapy. Is that accurate?
That is not accurate. I had, I mean, this is a story I'm very open about. So I'm happy to see. I had testicular cancer over a decade ago. I think it was about 12 years ago now. And I was going through chemotherapy, and I had read, I had indulged over off and on over the years in using marijuana. And I had heard and read about the fact that it could help with the nausea and the sleeplessness and anxiety and aches and pains that chemotherapy takes. And for a period of the time when I was going through chemotherapy, I thought, well, I'm not going to use cannabis because that's probably just an excuse to get high, and I didn't really buy into the medical piece. But I felt so bad one night, and I had access to some cannabis that I just smoked some weed just to be straight up about it on the show. And the results for me were immediate and stunning. I had an appetite. I was able to sleep. My nausea just diminished probably by 90% within about 5 minutes. My pain decreased, my anxiety going forward decreased. It was such an incredible and overwhelming change that it caused me to change my career from being a corporate lawyer outside and bankruptcy and trial lawyer outside of the realm of cannabis to saying this, I want to focus my whole entire career on representing businesses in the cannabis industry to help bring this to people. I mean, and that's the truth of it. It was such an amazing experience.
Which is an argument for the legalization of the medical use of marijuana, which there are many proponents of, and it's really close, I think, to passing here in North Carolina. But extrapolate that out to what is legal here now, and that is CBD oil and the growing of hemp that produces that CBD oil. Can you get the same, what you called stunning, immediate, and comprehensive relief that made you a proponent of this from CBD, or do you have to use marijuana?
Well, I want to clarify something, and that is that hemp is lawful in North Carolina. It's lawful to grow. It's lawful to process. It's lawful to manufacture hemp products. So CBD is next to THC is the most well-known cannabinoid, but all cannabinoids in the plant, including THC, as long as the concentrations don't exceed 0.3, I should say even a little more, as long as including Delta 9 THC, as long as concentrations don't exceed 0.3% are legal. So it's not just legal to grow. Of course, it's legal to grow. But you'll see all sorts of hemp products on the market, and there are new products with what we're calling sort of novel cannabinoids such as CBG and CBC and CBN that all have their unique places in the in the spectrum of health benefits. But to your question about can you get that relief from just ingesting a hemp or hemp product, sometimes our bodies have a what's called an endocannabinoid system. That receives these cannabinoids, and these cannabinoids help us maintain a sense of homeostasis. And so for some people, CBD, a high concentration of CBD is what they need. For some people, it's a high concentration of THC, but for most of us, it's some amount of the various compounds. And so if you don't need a whole lot of Delta-9 THC for your particular health condition, well, then hemp can help out a lot. But if you do, then you might need a marijuana product. And that's a major, major generalization. But I know we have limited time, so I want to make sure that. But yes, we need marijuana legalization. We need the whole plant.
CBD is just one aspect of what comes out of growing hemp. We're going to talk about some of the other uses for hemp when we come back. We'll talk about supply and demand and how that impacts the agricultural industry, which has already been alluded to, in just a moment. It's Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the legal production of hemp in North Carolina, which is now underway after a pilot program ended in June and Governor Cooper signed a law making the production of hemp for the purposes of CBD oil and other products legal. Rod Kite is an attorney and author and deals almost exclusively now in the hemp CBD marijuana area. Dr. Wuchen Yang is a professor of natural resources and environmental design at North Carolina A&T, and Bert James is an industrial hemp and agriculture consultant and a farmer who grows hemp. And according to North Carolina A&T, Bert, it has been claimed that there are more than 25,000 products that can be made from hemp. Where most North Carolina farmers are growing it, are they growing it for CBD oil or these other products?
Oh, I'll take this quick chance to jog back to a part of the question I didn't answer earlier. And it is completely legal to grow, as Rod said, but we did shift from a state pilot program. North Carolina was one of the early adopters to the federal bill. So basically now, as long as you get your background check and get your license with the federal government, you're clear to grow for whatever use that you choose. However, we made comment, federal government right now, everything's kind of up in the air, a lot of political conversations going on. A lot of farmers are not comfortable with the federal government getting that license like they were with the state government. It's just that locality, there's familiarity. And so when you have to go to get your, FBI background check, get your fingerprints done, a lot of farmers aren't really up for that. So there's plenty of opportunities, but the infrastructure, as we spoke to earlier, is just being built. So on the one hand, the CBD infrastructure that was so widespread is in some part being kind of taken apart while we're waiting for the fiber side to really get going. And you know, we have a rich, rich history of textiles in North Carolina. So it's very exciting, the momentum and the energy that's behind that in our state. So we're very much in a position to take the lead again.
So what I'm hearing you say is that the people who are growing it, including yourself, are growing it because the CBD side of this has got their act together, but the other product lines that can come from the growing of hemp are still in the developmental stages. Would that be a way to put it?
I don't know the exact numbers, and potentially Dr. Yang might, but you know, we had a major fallout in acreage. We were kind of tiptoeing up to one of the leading states, or at least in the top five. And, you know, other states can go bigger quickly because of their field size and, you know, just they're looking for crops harder than we are. But we've reduced the number of license holders, the number of acreage produced, and the acres that are being grown for CBD have now been reduced. So the quality is now increased. The efficiency is increased, and we're probably seeing a lot more indoor production for that cleanliness and that pristine product that you have the environmental control for. So the other side of you are correct. Now we're seeing a shift to more a totally different ball game. So if you grow this plant, 2,500 plants to the acre, like CBD, it's going to grow like a short, bushy Christmas tree. And for fiber, totally different animal. We're going to grow 1 million plants per acre. And it's going to be, to quote Guy Carpenter, if we do it right, the size of a number two pencil for textile grade fiber.
So Dr. Young, since it can produce 25,000 different products, if you grow it and you harvest the CBD oil, can you then use the same plant that you've harvested the oil from to produce the textile material for clothing and shoes and carpets and paper, et cetera?
I would say so that, you know, just hemp have, you know, multiple, you know, uses. You know, you can just extract the CBD oil, and then the other part you can use as fiber, you know, and for the, you know, other product that composite, you know, materials, you know, like for cars, for the car panel. So, and I want to continue what Mr. James mentioned. So, you know, right now, you know, since January 1 this year, so North Carolina pilot program, they see, you know, have been, you know, stopped. So, and then the transitioning from the North Carolina pilot hemp program to federal, which is with USDA, and then the farmers have to go through, you have to get your fingerprinted, and then you get your FBI background check, and then you can apply, go through the process, apply, you know, for the license. I gone through that myself, you know, and once again, you know, North Carolina A&T, you know, we are here to help our, you know, our stakeholders, small farmers, limited resource farmers, so help them to understand the process. So where we, you know, that we can help. So, you know, we will do so, and either one-on-one, you know, consultations, or go, you know, go through the process. I myself, you know, representing North Carolina AINT, get a research license. I go through the same process. So that's, you know, and also, you know, back to Mr. James mentioned that, you know, I think in North Carolina, if I remember correctly, before we transition to the federal USDA hemp program, I think we got roughly about 1,500 license holders. And then just, you know, I think from that time on, I think either it go flat or, you know, kind of stationary for, you know, a couple of years, we peaked. So we are among, you know, last time I checked, I think we are among the top 10. So I don't know the current situation. So, but, you know, I don't have a number since transition, since January to the federal part.
So there's a lot of hoops that evidently farmers have to jump through, and I'm not sure all farmers want to do that, but Bert, you have your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, actually, it's not bad. This is a great opportunity to let farmers know and people interested. I was completely blown away with how easy the system was to get your license on the federal level. And it was easy on the state level, don't get me wrong, but I could not speak highly enough of the experience that I had and the helpfulness that the USDA gave me, the help that they gave me through that process was pretty amazing for any federal agency to be that responsive. So it was a really seamless transition.
Well, let me ask you this, because now that it's legal, Rod has said that this is a great state for hemp. I'm not sure what he means by that. I know Dr. Young wants to get back in, and I'll let you in a second, Dr. Young. But Bert, is it a great state for growing hemp? Can this be the crop that rescues tobacco farmers?
Wow, I don't know if there's any rescuing for tobacco farmers.
Well, no, they can stop growing tobacco and grow hemp.
I don't think it's quite there for scale yet. And okay. I don't know that I hear currently tobacco economics are, you know, there's a mass exodus from tobacco with or without hemp. So I don't know that we need to put that type of pressure this early on the crop. If you give us 5 years and we'll get back on here, and I'll give you the update to see if it can take tobacco out or not. But right now, I would not make that claim.
Okay. Dr. Young.
I want to add to, you know, Mr. James just mentioned, you know, go through the process. And also, you know, even though the hemp, industrial hemp, you know, field is kind of saturated for a while, but, you know, during the commission, the North Carolina Industrial Hemp Commission, you know, Dr. Tom Melton, you know, every commission meeting, I think Mr. James probably attended most of the meetings. I was there just every meeting. You know, every time with the commission, particularly, you know, Dr. Melton, you know, otherwise the farmers or whoever want to get a license or get a permit at the time, we always otherwise the farmers or whoever else, do your homework and make sure you have a buyer. Don't just jump into it and say this is really money-making machine, but you have to really have a buyer, and not just have a buyer, you need to have a contract. And you know, Mr. Kelly right there can help you. And if you don't understand the contract, ask a lawyer. You know, that's your best in the insurance. So otherwise, if you produce your products and you cannot sell it, you put all the investment down there, and then you just don't get anything. So
is that part of the problem? We stopped growing hemp legally in this country about 60 years ago, and so a lot of the knowledge surrounding how to grow healthy hemp crops disappeared because those farmers are no longer with us. And I would think that the infrastructure to bring those crops to market is in its infancy. Would that be accurate, Rod? And if so, how? Because some states are ahead of North Carolina on this. How do you build those connections?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely accurate. You know, to Dr. Young's point, you know, we were really building a supply chain as the things were coming to market. So, you know, if you just to take some hypothetical thing, let's say you want to, I don't know, produce shoes or something. Well, you know, there's all sorts of hurdles, but there is a established shoe supply chain. You know, where you get your materials, where you plug them in, how you distribute them, whatnot. When we're talking about hemp, that supply chain just didn't exist. So you'd have, you know, a farmer, you know, Bert talked about this earlier, growing, you know, lots and lots of hemp. But then as Dr. Young just said, oh, well, but do you have a buyer for that? You know, and then maybe there would be a process that would process it down into the extracts and oils used to make the products. But then again, you know, where does that go and how is it distributed and what are the retail markets? Oh, and there's all these advertising restrictions and there's education with the public and there's, you know, federal law conflicts with state law and this state's law conflicts with that state law. And I could go on and on and on. And so all of that is still being worked out. And while on the cannabinoid side, by that, I mean the CBD oil, and so on, these other products that you've been discussing, while those are beginning to shake out and sort of normalize, you know, a lot of hemp's promise has to do with these other 24,999 products that you referenced, and the supply chain is just not quite there yet. And so we'll see. I'll have people call me and say, I've got, you know, a great crop and plans to sell fiber, but you know, where is that buyer? And maybe there's only two buyers. So
is that why, really, Bert, you alluded to the whole industry collapsing a few minutes ago. Is that because when the pilot program started and now that it's over and they've legalized the growing of it, a lot of farmers saw this as an opportunity to make some money quickly and got into the industry, and yet the infrastructure to distribute the end product was not yet there? It was that part of the reason it collapsed? Too many people, not enough demand?
You know, I see this. We got to make sure we don't make the same mistake again now with the new uses that are emerging and some of the companies that are starting to invest. We had a lot of people follow their spreadsheet to the field. And, you know, an investor's spreadsheet and a business model, you know, Mother Nature does not typically play by the same rules that a black and white piece of paper does. And so people got lost in their vision and their conquest for great riches. And these spreadsheets look so phenomenal. Many people could look at that and say, well, if we just do 15%, if we just do 20% of what the potential is, we're still making more money than anything else we can touch. So we're seeing that now where, farmers, there's a lot of opportunity. But to give you an idea of the fallout, I work for a company now in Southern Virginia, and they're in the process of getting this infrastructure online. And luckily, we've got some other businesses in North Carolina that already have decortication facilities, which is how you process the raw material. I asked, this is FiberX, and I asked them, I said, look, we need to pay for the farmers' inputs so that there's no risk. These guys have already seen this, fallout. We need to ensure to them that we're going to do this the right way. We're going to go at a scaled, crawl, walk, run approach. We're going to make sure we get the right genetics, the right quality. And as you begin to bring your infrastructure online, we'll have all the field work figured out and maybe have a bit of a stockpile of material to work with. So it's a different approach now. I think many people are going to see this same system where, and I've said this now for 5 years, Rod could attest to this. If you can put together $10 million to pay for the infrastructure to process the crop, you can put together another million to make sure your farmers get paid all the way. No matter if the crop wins or fails, if you're asking them to do something that's different, experimental, you should pay the way for that until we get it dialed in.
So see, with the legalization of the growing of hemp and the legalization of CBD products, at least in North Carolina and other places around the country, that seems like an incremental step toward the legalization of at least medical, if not recreational, marijuana, Rod. And there have been these several bills that have been creeping through the General Assembly only to stall out. There's a medical marijuana bill waiting, I think, for them to return in the fall. You're an optimist. What's your prediction? I'm told you're an optimist. What's your prediction about the legalization of medical marijuana here? And what would that mean for farmers?
Yeah, no, I think I'll try to break it down quickly. I'm a very big optimist. I think we're going to see marijuana legalization in North Carolina within the next 2 to 5 years. I think where I get more my lawyer cynical hat is, what does that look like? And the current bill that has the most traction is actually, for reasons that would probably be the subject of a whole nother show, a terrible, terrible, terrible. Not only is it really bad for, it's completely terrible for the hemp farmers in North Carolina. It's really terrible for most farmers in North Carolina. It's terrible for the public. It's terrible for social equity reasons. It's terrible, terrible, terrible. It's a giveaway to big corporations. But I'll stop, get off my soapbox. I think what happens is people get excited about, hey, I think we're going to have marijuana legalization in North Carolina. And you have to stop and say, hey, let's talk about what that means. And people are so starved for some real progress in cannabis reform in North Carolina that they almost are just happy to take anything. So we really need the correct bill.
I have a minute left. A CBS News poll in April of this year found that nearly 2/3 of Americans want marijuana use to be legal at the federal and state levels. And two polls conducted by Survey USA and Spectrum News found that 72% of North Carolina voters support the legalization of medical marijuana. So the voters are ahead of the lawmakers here. You work in Oregon, Rod, where both the growing and the consumption of medical and recreational marijuana is legal. Was the same true there? Did voters' opinions precede that of the legislators?
Yes, it always does in the United States. That's a little bit different than what we see in other countries. But what I like to say is that cannabis is the great uniter, and we just have to get our legislators primarily on it. And for some reason, there's a lot of fear there. I think we're beginning to see that happen.
And farmers are a conservative bunch, Bert. Yes or no? Would they be open to growing marijuana should it be legalized?
It'll grow, but the system, the big industries we talked about, they're already in front of it, so it won't be what they think.
Had to be yes or no. Bert James grows hemp, or Rod Knight works toward the legalization of it, and Dr. Wuching Yang works on it environmentally. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.